I'm your host, Juliet, and I'm here with my co-host, Teresa.
Hi.
And you're listening to Mind the Gap. Mind the Gap is a podcast dedicated to discovering the minds behind health, rehabilitation, and neuroscience researchers. So sit back, relax, and please, mind the gap. So today we are here with one of my good friends from the LBRF lab, Darby.
Hello.
Darby, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, my name is Darby. I have been at Dal for almost 6 years now because I did my undergrad and now I'm completing my master's, but we'll go into more details about that later on, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm originally from Ontario, specifically a town called Napanee. And what else do you want to know about me? Short and sweet.
Do you have any cute pets?
Well, yes. Yes, I do, Juliet.
Funny that you ask.
I have a... How old is she now? I got her in 2019... Or she was born in 2019. It's a
5.
So she's... Yeah, she must be going on 4 or 5 now. She is a rabbit, a mini Rex Velveteen.
Ooh.
Otter Black.
Otter Black, fancy.
Her name is Kinji, which is actually named after the Purkinje cells in your cerebellum.
No way.
Yes, because they control fine movement, which she really needs when she does her zoomies.
Huh. I think I know the word Purkinje from the Purkinje fibers of the heart more than I do from the cerebellum. Yes. So that's really interesting.
I get that. I also think it means something to do with the sunset.
Oh, interesting.
I can't remember. Someone was like, sunset. And I was like, okay.
Sure.
Yeah, maybe. That's cool. I knew you were from Ontario. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Yeah. But a really small town, right?
Yes.
Because you're under the impression that Halifax is a big city.
Yes, because the closest city to me would have been Kingston, Ontario.
Okay.
Like Queens. And Kingston is significantly smaller than Halifax as well.
Yeah. It's always really funny because I got into a bit of a debate / argument with my brother because we were talking about how Vancouver is a big city and how Calgary is a medium-sized city. And my brother was like, no, Calgary is a small city. And if Calgary is small, Halifax
is
miniature. So, anyways. And then he was like, you know what? Vancouver isn't even a big city when you think about the biggest cities in the world. And I'm like, yeah, but in Canada. Anyways, we never actually found a middle ground. I'm not going to lie. But, So, Darby, one of our segments that we have is to get to know you a little bit better. We ask you some first date questions. I'm going to start off with, what kind of person were you in high school?
Quiet.
Quiet?
I would say borderline nerd, but it depends on what it was. I loved science classes. I was in band, did a little bit of drama. Very big Marvel fan.
Nice.
Back then, so.
I remember really liking Marvel, too.
Mm-hmm. Like, it was my hobby to be watching Netflix ever since I owned it from, like, when I was 12 when we first got it until I was 18. Like, that was my hobby.
That was the hobby.
Yes.
What instrument did you play?
Oh, the clarinet.
Oh. Nice.
I did also take guitar lessons briefly through high school.
Nice.
So.
Yeah. I never did band, but I feel like I missed out a little bit.
I do too. Some of my friends did it, and I was always like, I felt like they were like just their own little clan of, you know, they had like an exclusive little friendship.
Yeah.
I started band in grade like 7 and 8 instead of in high school because I did a program. I know some people have middle school. We didn't, but I still did a different program. So I actually, like, you had the choice of renting your instrument.
Yeah.
And then we looked online and you could get one from Costco.
Oh, no.
So I played my Costco clarinet for like 6 years.
That's so cool.
Yes.
Huh. Yeah. I don't know about you guys in your high schools, but we had some like pretty defined groups. So in my high school, I graduated with over 500 people. So it was quite large. And there was a very defined theater kid group, band group. I think there was like dance people who were in dance. And then there was also a pretty large just like kids who had rich parents, and they would just like come in and like they were just like fully caked out in makeup and like luxury clothes, and this was just a public school, so wow. It was always very strange to see them. And like to this day, if you look at their social media pages, you'd be like, wow. Definitely different level of income. And then there was the AP kids, and there was the football
kids. Did you go to an art school?
I went to an art school in grade 5 and 6.
Oh, but not in high school.
Not in high school. I went to a very football-heavy high school.
Same.
And so, yeah, there was also a lot of the sporty kids. I think I fell into – I don't even think. I know I fell into the AP kids because I took mostly all AP, but, like, I didn't do English or social. I'm not very good at those subjects. But, yeah, like, the groups were quite defined, but it wasn't – I want to say it wasn't clicky, but I also want to say that you can't really have groups without things being – so, true. You know.
I feel like that's, like, just part of high school.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure if you guys had kind of, like, as defined groups as my high school did.
I know for my high school we were a little more, like – intertwined, so there were definitely students who were more like theater. I would say though the band was the most defined group because they would always go, they'd have after school practice, they would like, they just always moved in a group almost. But other than that, like, people were kind of like, our high school was kind of like, I would say it was like fluid in the sense that, at least for me, like, I was friends with multiple people in different, I guess, groups, you would say. But there wasn't, like, hard lines or anything. It wasn't like, oh, those are the people that do this. Or we also had a large hockey presence in my school. Yeah, so there was a lot of, oh, yeah, like, the hockey lingo. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't know if we had huge hockey presence. We probably did. I just wasn't aware of it, to be honest.
Oh, you would be aware because they talk in, like, gibberish.
Yeah, the football was so prevalent, though, because you would have, like, the majority of the men on the football team would regularly show up to school in wearing nice suits because it was game day.
And it was, like, so funny.
Yeah. Meanwhile, my brother, who was also in band, would also show up in a tuxedo for his band practice. So, you know, it's like they got overlooked, but, you know, just kidding. They probably weren't overlooked.
I have a question for both of you. Okay. Did you cross over with your siblings in high school?
No.
I crossed
over with a cousin.
Okay. How was that?
It was funny because I don't think people realize we were related, and we would both walk to my grandparents together, and, like, the first week of high school, everyone's like, you're dating a grade 12. I'm like, absolutely not.
You're like, no, that's my cousin.
I mean, he's a cool dude, but no.
Yeah, no, I did cross over. Only one sibling I didn't go to school with, except for, like, grades 1 through 6. Well, not even for the entire time, because I moved schools a lot, but my older brother, Luke, he was in grade 12 when I was in grade 10. And all I remember is he was friends with a bunch of really, really big, tall basketball players. And my brother is also very tall, so he would just, like, roam the halls, and I was like, that's intimidating. And then me and Felix, I was in grade 12 when he was in grade 10. So everyone in my family is within 1 or 2 years of age, basically. And, yeah, I always think that it would have been really fun if Felix and I were twins, because I think we would have gotten along really well. But I think, like, teachers would always be really surprised, be like, there's another one? And another one?
Another.
So, yeah, it was fun. It was never super awkward. When I was in elementary school, Felix was an incredibly cute kid, so I got, like, a lot of clout for that. Like,
oh.
They were like, wow, like, Juliet, your brother is so cute. I'm like, I know. That is my brother. So, but he hated it. He was like, I'm not cute. I'm manly.
I am a mature child.
Yeah.
So, Darby, our next first date question for you is, what animated character did you have a crush on when you were a kid?
Oh, no.
I'm guessing it might be something Marvel related now.
Well, no, because I got into it by the time it was mostly live action. Yeah. Oh, goodness. We might need a second.
To fill up the time, I recently asked this to Kyle, and he said Kim Possible. And I was like, huh.
I don't think I had a crush on an animated character. I think I knew they were animated.
we can change the question to just, like, celebrity crush.
Yeah, who was your childhood crush?
Yeah.
You know what? I'm going to go with a Marvel character, Bucky Barnes, a.k.a. Sebastian Stan. He would have been in the Captain Americas.
Okay. Okay, I was going to say I don't know that one.
Bucky Barnes.
Yeah, yeah.
But I also was part of the era of putting different characters together, so shipping them. And some people would ship him with Steve or Captain America, so they'd be called Stucky. And I always really supported any relationships that weren't actually never going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, I do ship that.
Yes. Yeah. Mine is Andrew Garfield in the second, well, it's not really the second, but the next remake of the Spider-Man movies. Mm-hmm. I don't really.
That's your childhood crush?
That's my childhood crush, I think. Yeah. Maybe not young. Early childhood.
Okay, I was gonna say.
But yeah, I really liked Andrew Garfield.
I currently really like Andrew Garfield. I don't think I knew anything of him when I was a kid.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know who mine would be. I feel like mine probably was, who is the guy in Lizzie McGuire? Not the, like, not her friend, but
I don't know. I don't think I watched much.
Nick Carter, like, okay. Aaron Carter, one of those brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like probably him.
I mean, I don't think it was a crush, but I really liked Tigger, so.
Yeah. Oh my god, I loved Eeyore.
Yeah, yes. Eeyore is kind of, he kind of slabs. He's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so now that we're done with those first eight questions, we passed those ones. Anyways, we'll get into more research-related questions. So starting with, why did you choose to pursue research?
That's a loaded question.
Yeah, my bad.
I would say many reasons. I think it was partly because I was exposed to research in high school ever so briefly. My mom is a administrative coordinator in research currently, so I was, and it's within a hospital department, so I was able to kind of see doctors doing research as well as people who took a academic research path, and I was more drawn to that. I think the other big reason I'm in research I was thinking about is from my past of lifeguarding. Being able to stand there and ponder, like, saving people's lives really gets you thinking. And I really thought, like, there's only so much a lifeguard can do. There's only so much a paramedic can do. There's only so much a doctor can do. So looking at the bigger picture of, like, what do you do if someone dives in the shallow end and breaks their back and now can't use their limbs? What do you do if someone does drown and there isn't oxygen going to their brain? Like, I think there's, research could help the bigger picture where, like, the hands-on life-saving maybe can't.
Yeah. Very inquisitive.
Yeah, that's really insightful.
I feel like my, if I were to be a lifeguard, like, I know that I definitely have an ability to just, like, stare at a blank wall.
I was a lifeguard, now I feel bad that I was just thinking about, like, rehabilitation of people.
I was just terrified, absolutely terrified someone was gonna, like, break their neck constantly. No.
Yeah, I could see myself being worried about that as well. But yeah, I have an incredible ability to just, like, sit and do nothing. So, not really sure. I like to think of it as a meditation, right? I don't know.
Mindfulness.
Mindfulness, yeah. No, that's really cool. I think I remember chatting with you when I started my master's, and you definitely seem very passionate about just, like, answering unanswered questions, which I think makes a really good researcher. Yeah. So.
And also asking questions. I think I maybe ask more than I answer, but
That's a good point. And in high school, I asked so many questions, but that was more about, like, understanding things, but I think it's kind of similar, maybe, and also in university. I was definitely the kid at the front of the class who put their hand up, like, every 2 minutes, and people were like, ah, but sometimes I just did it because I was bored, so.
You're like, let's shake things up.
Yeah.
Raise your hand.
Especially if I knew, like, a professor could go on a good tangent, and I'm like, my brain's not really working right now. I'm going to ask a really loaded question. It's strategy is what it is.
We salute you. I was a back of the class kid.
I was, too. I was at the back, except for when I was made in I think it was grade 10 math, because it was, like, I don't know. I found grade 10 math to be the easiest math that I took. Like, grade 9 was, like, harder than grade 10 in my opinion, at least at my school. So I was just goofing off the whole time. Like, I was just like, this is fine. Yeah. And so then the teacher made me and my other two friends sit in the front row so she could keep her eye on us and we could settle down because we were hyper.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
No, for me, I definitely, like, I mean, I'm a bit of a nerd, so I really like going to class, firstly, so that's a big red flag. But then, secondly, there's a few things. I don't actually sit in the direct front because it hurts my neck to, like, look up when I'm in the front. So I sit in, like, the first few rows, but, like, maybe third or fourth row back or something. But I can't sit in the back row because, firstly, my vision kind of sucks. So I can't see anything from back there. And secondly, I cannot focus when there's people, like, online shopping beside me.
Oh, yeah.
And without a doubt, there is going to be someone at the back of class, like, online shopping. And I will be like, ooh,
or, like, looking
that's
at
cute. Yeah.
What are those quizzes again?
BuzzFeed
quizzes. Oh, yeah. My gosh. Yeah. So, when I got to university, I was definitely, like, a second, third row person.
Yeah. Because I otherwise just could not focus, and I would get really stressed if I, like, couldn't catch what the prof was saying while I was in class. Because before COVID, when they did everything online and everything was recorded, it was like, if you don't catch it in class, then it's like, you're not getting it. So
yeah. I think, yes, the back of the room is not helpful for focusing.
No.
But when I ever sat in the front, I was, like, just everyone is watching you feelings.
Yeah.
And I get a little fidgety in my seat, so it's, like, I feel frozen, so like you can't move.
Feel like I don't want to distract people.
Oh, I was a big distraction.
Julia's hand was just waving back and forth the
not
whole
only
time.
Me putting my hand up all the time, but, like, I would, like, be like, I need to braid my hair right now, or, like, I'm going to eat some, like, celery, and, like, you're going to hear me eat celery. I was a big distraction. Not the greatest, because I think sometimes people could pass me as being quite annoying. So, but not as much in university, because I was there to learn for the most part. But I did have my days where I was like, I'm gonna ask really annoying questions just for the fun of it. So, oopsies.
I have a quick question.
Yes.
Would you, Julia, also sit at the front of the room for exams?
Yeah, but I would say that for most of my classes, like, once I found a spot, that was my spot for the semester. So that's usually how it went. But for, like, final exams, I was always assigned a seat. So couldn't really choose for that. But, yeah, I did do it at the front of the class for the most part.
Because, yeah, here at Dalhousie, the Dalplex exam room, I think it's very telling. Just the walk to the front felt so long. I was like, I'm not walking all the way up there.
But then you eventually have to when you hand in your exam.
No, you can hand it into the back as well.
Really?
I never knew that.
Yeah, I would never touch the front.
Oh, wow.
But then there were some people that got very intimidated by being in the back and seeing everyone.
Everyone, yeah.
Yeah. I was assigned a spot. I never got to choose in, like, those big rooms. But I think maybe, I'm not really sure why that is, just, like, alphabetized. And my last name starts with an R, so I'm never at the front.
So, Darby, we are wondering, we know that you said that you were interested in research because your mom works in research, and then in undergrad and everything, but how did you get involved with the LBRF?
Yeah, so I started as a volunteer in my third year of undergrad. I volunteered in about, I think, two labs beforehand in my second year. And I think I went into this lab with a higher interest of pursuing an honors at that time.
Yeah.
And then I ended up doing the master's as well.
It's pretty simple. So how did you find out about it? Is it just advertised? Like, did you Google it? Did you know people in it?
No, I didn't know anyone, but it was a mix, I think, between looking at the faculty site, because they highly recommend that, although I don't find that as accurate. So I think when I was looking at people that were cross-appointed with other faculties, that's where I went. And then as well as having a website in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that really helps.
Yeah, we were telling Janet recently about how the website really attracts people to the lab, because that's her little...
Because yeah, it's true, the faculty page on the university, sometimes that's not even their current research that they're doing.
No.
And you have no idea whether they're actually active in research, or you could email them and they're like, yeah, I don't even have a lab right now. Like, I'm just doing something else. So, yeah, the website is definitely helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you did your undergrad in neuroscience?
Yes.
Okay.
So I was in the psych and neuro department in the Faculty of Science, so... puts you far away from the health sciences, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. And what did you do your honors research in?
That's going back a bit. My honors research was a TMS study. It was looking at the IPL with repetitive stimulation for inhibiting that area.
Okay.
And it was Jack, the PhD student's, part of his very large project where he had physical practice, motor imagery, sham groups, and he looked at the IPL, the SMA, and the primary motor cortex.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very large study. There was three honor students my year, and we each took a region of the brain.
Nice.
And I'm very happy with my choice.
Yeah. Yours was the one that got published. Unless they all got published?
They're in the works right now.
Oh, okay.
But the IPL was definitely one... That's what the current honor students did.
Yeah.
And I think that was the one he was working on right before COVID started.
Yeah. And for listeners who don't know what the IPL is, it's the inferior parietal lobe, which we think might be involved with motor imagery processes. And the TMS, which you should know this by now if you've been listening, but it's transcranial magnetic stimulation. And we can basically disrupt the inferior parietal lobe to see what its involvement is with certain tasks and stuff. So, yeah, that's a really fun honors project. A lot more involved than mine was. Mine was during COVID, and it was just doing an analysis of already collected data. So it was nice because, you know, it was restricting to do an honors during COVID.
Yes.
But it was not the full research experience where you get to interact with participants and collect data. So
We got very lucky because it was winter of 2021 we collected data. Mm,
that is lucky.
And I think just the way it shook down with the current members of the lab, we were kind of one of the only projects that I think was like ready to go right before COVID, and then it got postponed. So it was like ready to go. So it was a little less hands-on with the creation of it and even like the ethics going in.
Mm-hmm.
But we were very lucky to be able to recruit at all that year and have that experience.
Yeah, nice. So my next question is, what is your current involvement with research?
Yeah, so currently I'm a second year master's student, so I'm finishing up a project, I would say, at this point. It's looking at how attentional skills influence motor imagery performance, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
It started this way. I think it's evolved since, but funny enough, I think the project really came from collecting that data during honors because it was COVID, so most of the participants coming in were through personal ways of getting participants. So I knew these people, and you knew I had like an 8:30 a.m. slot. And I remember so many people, like I had roommates that I was calling minutes before we were supposed to be doing the study, and you knew they were half asleep when they were doing study. And I just thought, there's no way these people are paying attention. They just got out of bed for the first time in like 6 months
yes.
before 9 a.m. So
Yeah.
And that's actually such an interesting area, because if you think about the applications of our research, if someone has a stroke, it's like how – I feel like these days – even the healthiest person's attention span is fairly short. Mm-hmm. Like if you've just underwent like a stroke or anything that's like disrupting a region in your brain that's responsible for movement, like how much are you actually attending to motor imagery?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's crazy because I used to have a really good attention span. I really enjoyed watching movies with my family, and I could sit down at a table and do copious amounts of homework. Like, when I think back to first year and second year, I studied way too much. But now it's like my attention is not what it used to be at all. I mean, I still have a pretty okay time, like, sitting down and doing homework, but I do them in way smaller chunks of time. And I have the same concerns. Like, when I do data collection for a fairly short study, 35 minutes, including setting people up and doing paperwork, it's like I can see that they start really strong, and then as they go through the study, a lot of my participants look very bored, and like you don't know how hard they're trying. So
yeah, especially in the group study where we did have a physical practice group, and you could see them interacting and reacting to their own results because they would trace a shape and they would see it right after. Whereas the motor imagery group was, it literally just looked like someone tapping a screen constantly, like not even taking the time. Sometimes. Trying to discredit it.
Yeah. I don't want to say anything bad about Trace Lab, but I'm not going to lie.
Hey, you have two Trace Lab people here.
Sometimes I get angry with it because I'm like, you assume that I can remember a movement that's that fast? Who do you think I am? I can't even move that fast. But yeah, I think for the most part, I try really hard with Trace Lab. I'm like, please don't let me be the one participant who lost attention. But it's hard. It's not an easy task. So I know that a lot of people that I've talked to who's done your study really enjoys the questionnaires that you have.
Yes, I think it definitely shakes things up in the lab. Like, it's a little bit of a different thing to be asking everyone. I think there's a lot of self-reflection that goes on. It's now a habit for me to go, how was that? How did that go? How do you feel after, to make sure the person's like
okay.
Okay.
Well, I'm not going to name names, but I think I told you. When I was doing the questionnaire, I was like, is this like, I forget. It was like the attention one, I think. And I was like asking you what it was about because someone in my life, I was like, they are checking off all these boxes, and I think they might have an attention problem.
Yeah, I really liked the question that asks you, like, how often do you have to reread questions to understand the question? And, like, hearing a lot of people come back and being like, I had to reread the question asking me how often I had to read the question. So, and I was like, yeah, I do that. Yeah, I do that quite a bit, too. The thing that I'm the worst at with attention, and anyone who knows me will call me out on this, is, like, I can be very attentive in a conversation, but as soon as I need to respond to a text message, I cannot attend to anything else. Like, I just fail at, being present while also texting. I also have to stop walking. Like, if I'm walking somewhere, I can't, like, walk and text, so it takes my full attention to write, like, okay. So, yeah.
I think maybe a mini analysis on the rereading one. Yeah. So I think that one might have been particularly high, almost like an outlier. Mm. The other question of interest was a left and rights question, because then we have a task that involves looking at left and right hands. And I am very curious if someone who is less confident in their lefts and rights is doing more poorly, and it's so subtle because it's like one question out of probably almost 40 questions being asked, and then 20 minutes later you're now doing a task. So I think it's separated enough.
Yeah, that is. Yeah,
yeah, that is interesting. I do think that I have pretty good ability to distinguish left and right just from dancing, because you always had to take like a combination on the left side and swap it to the right to do it on the right side, and it's like required a lot of years of practice to get that really good. But I think without dance, I would be, I mean, honestly, I say that I'm pretty good, but just the other day, I looked down to see which hand is my left hand, so.
Are you good with directions, Julia?
Oh, terrible.
Okay, because I have a theory that people who don't know their left from their right are also people who are directionally challenged.
Oh, like, again, another thing someone will tell you about me is I am horrible with directions, horrible. I once directed my friend. I was trying my hardest to direct them to a coffee shop, but we ended up in a parking lot for a like car dealership, and I was like, sorry, I thought this was the coffee shop, and they were like, were you using maps? And I was like, no, I knew where I was going. I really didn't. Yeah, my parents are the worst. Is when my dad's like, oh yeah, I'll meet you down north. And I'm like, what? Where's north? Like, I don't
know.
How
is it down?
Yeah. Up north. Yeah, maybe he wouldn't say that. See, that's how bad I am with directions.
Do you know where the lab is from here?
Yeah, could you point to it?
Oh, God. that way?
No.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Left is correct.
Left is correct, but it's more this way.
Oh, boy. Yeah. No, I could not tell you. I remember reading a study when I was in some sort of psychology class, and they did like this. I don't know how this was ethical, but they would put people into the back of a truck that prevented them from seeing where they're going. And then they let them off into this open space that has like no buildings, no trees around it. It's just like a big hill. And they asked people to point in the direction of north. And on this study, they had equal females to males, and they found that males were like got above 50% correct, and females got below 50% correct. So I'm like, maybe I just can't feel the magnetic forces, you know, like the birds can. So
how old was that study?
Probably pretty old. Because I feel like when I learn about any psych study in any of my classes, they're like, you know, referencing before 2000s.
I'm convinced that it might just be that more men play video games, so they have a better spatial awareness.
That's a good point too. But yeah, like most men that I know in my life, if they talk about directions, they like it in like the northwest, south, east coordinates. Whereas I'm more like I need a building landmark for
I like
directions.
Northwest, southeast, because I can reference it to a body of water. Yes. I've always been able to do it that way.
And especially in Halifax.
That is crazy. I cannot do that.
Well, because, yeah, here we have the ocean. Yeah, and then in Ontario, we have Great Lakes.
Yes, exactly. I always know, like, lakeshore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Victoria, I was on an island. Water was everywhere, so couldn't do that one. And I also remember taking a class, and we were like, depending, like, the island is not actually, like, straight up and down, but we always talk about going up north, but it's actually not north.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
It's close enough.
It's close enough. It's always very confusing. Or if you talk about where's the states, there's locations in Canada where the states is adjacent to the Canadian spot, but everyone thinks of it
below.
Yeah, thinks of it as being below. So it's kind of like, we don't need directions, right?
So, Darby, yes. How has your master's experience gone for you? Any pros, maybe some cons?
I think it's gone really well. I would, the easiest con to talk about, or the easiest thing to talk about, is definitely COVID throughout it. Part of the reason I decided to do a master's right after my undergrad was due to COVID. Kind of felt like some experiences were taken away, so I wasn't quite ready to say goodbye to school.
Yeah.
As much as I knew I wanted to do a master's at one point, I just wasn't sure when. And it was too bad. I really thought that I did well doing classes online initially for the last year of my undergrad, so I thought that it would be a good, an okay experience to continue school. And it was a little heartbreaking because you'd start off with classes in person at the end of, like, 2021.
Yeah.
And then, like, that went in the winters, things would always close. So yeah. Then things flipped to online. It wasn't very regular. Some routines were, I think, a little hard to establish.
Mm-hmm.
But have gotten lucky that when COVID was probably still present, it was still during classes as opposed to trying to be recruiting for a study.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's been great. Pros, I've really enjoyed the experience of being able to develop my own study. I think, again, with COVID, there were some people with the reminiscent of being handed projects that were half completed or they were concepts already created. So it was, I really enjoyed that process.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it took a little longer, I think it was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very hands-on. Well, I can't say I coded everything. I can say I contributed to the coding.
Yeah.
I'll know I'll be able to do the statistics, do the writing, all of those things. So it's very exciting to be a part of the process start to end.
Mm-hmm. That is cool. You get, like, this nice sense of, like, autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've done this. This is mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. Is that how you felt at the end of your master's too, Teresa?
No.
I know the answer to that.
No. So the end of my master's was when COVID was, when they told us, oh, it's going to be closed for 2 weeks. COVID's just going to be here for a little. And then all of a sudden 2 weeks turned into 2 months. And then 2 months turned into 4 months. And then it was like, okay, we need to pivot. Mm. So my master's, which, I mean, the beginning of my master's experience was awesome. I loved my project. I was really excited to do a longitudinal study with three different groups of people and the whole shebang. And then COVID happened. And I ended up doing a systematic review paper.
Yeah.
But that's okay because I did my PhD.
Yeah, I was going to say, you persevered yeah. and you're like, let's do another one.
Yeah.
So I would say, Darby, big pro getting into rock climbing. Is that a part of your master's?
Outside of the research.
Yes. I would definitely say, generally speaking, now that COVID is mostly subsided, being able to get into nice routines and hobbies again.
Because mm-hmm.
I think that can be really challenging in undergrad classes. I really like the freedom of graduate
school. Oh, me too. Darby and I, we will go for like 2-hour, 3-hour climbing sessions, which, to be fair, we're not climbing for the entire time. But like me imagining doing that during my undergrad, like I would not have had time. So it's really nice. It's like a, oh yay, the day is over.
Yes.
So that's really nice. Yeah. I'm really glad that you're in the lab at the same time I'm in the lab as well. I feel like it makes the master's experience to have a bunch of other students around you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
especially that are doing the master's.
Yes. And it was a bit less like that last year,
mm-hmm.
but we still made it work. My year for master's students, we had a few more students in my year doing classes.
Yeah.
So was able to expand that way. But yeah.
Yeah. I'm very thankful for it because it's, I mean, Halifax is a really young city. So easy mm-hmm. to meet people, but also hard because, like, how do you meet people? So I think having a bunch of like-minded people in our lab makes the degree really worth it. Another pro.
I agree.
Yeah. So my next question, the most dreaded question that any student can ever get, but what are your plans once you finish your degree?
I really want to work in research now. Now that I've been able to do my own project, I think I like just being a part of projects
mm-hmm.
and research. I think like in a perfect world, I would drift towards slightly more clinical research where currently we're dealing with humans. healthy participants.
Mm.
I would maybe move in ideally into some form of clinical population
because
I really like the idea of research being implemented. I would like a study where, you know, you see a result and then you actually see it, people doing it, whether maybe not like a drug, but that's the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah. I did a pretty fun research job back in BC where I worked with a bunch of oncologists, and they output a lot of research that had like direct implications. Like we were mostly looking at biomarkers in the blood to see how that affects what treatment course you choose for specific types of cancer. But it was, like, really cool to see. It's like, yeah, we found that this biomarker in the blood indicates that this treatment would be more effective. And you're like, no way.
And then you're like, wow, and now they're doing it.
And now they're doing it. And it was a very quick turnaround, too. It's like...
Yeah, that'd be very rewarding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's very different to, like, fundamental theoretical neuroscience, I would say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it was a fun, like, 9-to-5 job, too. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's nice to only work within those hours and have the rest of the time to be free, especially when you've been a student for so long. Yes. So.
Yeah. When I was in high school and I visited the hospital a few times with my mom, the one time I got to go in and, like, see a heart surgery,
mm-hmm.
which was really cool. And even though the research component was pretty quick, it was mostly stopping in and collecting some of their, like, pre-test or post-test results.
Mm-hmm.
But even just that hands-on experience of, like, there is a person there.
I think that's really cool because, like, what you said earlier about realizing, you know, like people who are really in medical mm-hmm. fields, like paramedics, doctors, are dealing with that one patient, and then researchers are dealing with the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
That type of role in clinical research, you're doing both, you know?
Yes.
Like you get to have that, like, human-to-human experience of, like, seeing the person you're going mm-hmm. to, big picture, be helping.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is cool.
I do sometimes have, like, a bit of, like, a hard time with it at the same time. I think, like, one thing that my research position opened up to me is that working with clinical populations, it's like I know that the research that we're doing is important and that it will help future generations. And the other thing is participants are always 100% willing to consent to these studies and to be active participants and stuff. And, like, honestly, I think it gives them a sense of purpose. It's like they know that them being a participant will help maybe in the future finding better care for future people. But it just, like, sometimes it just feels so burdensome. And it shouldn't be. Like, it's not. Like, most of the time we're only asking for, like, a blood sample.
Yeah.
But you're just there and you're like... I just feel, you know, it's like you're going through a lot.
And then, like, another poking and prodding
person. Yeah, and I'm asking you to go to a clinic and, like, organize something and yada, yada, yada. And most of the time there's, like, a lot of pain involved, a lot of fatigue involved and stuff. And they're, like, so excited to be a part of your study. But it's, like, hard not to feel like you're, you know.
Imposing.
Imposing. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, especially when you get to meet them. In real life. So
I think I had almost an opposite experience because when I first wanted to do research, it's like, yeah, I want to cure Alzheimer's or something. So then I went down the path of looking very molecularly, so taking genetics classes. I have a minor in biology, which was a struggle. And it was realizing that, no, I don't want to be looking at cells and rats. I want to be actually interacting with people. And it's funny because you're right. Like, I started off wanting to get away from that, and now I've been drawn back to it.
Mm-hmm.
I even, with a part-time job at Dell in safety and just starting in this lab, I was trying to bridge things. And I have a disability management certificate that really would help me have some more hands-on experiences with just helping people get back to work and things like that.
Yeah. No, it's, like, it's a really important field, job, everything. And a lot of people are doing a lot of things to make the world better. So it is really, really good. I think just that, yeah, sometimes it's just, like, I guess I felt it in my heart. I don't really know how else to say it. Especially... after COVID, there's a lot of job shortages, and seeing how difficult it was for participants to get blood work, not just for their own, like, primary care, but then also for research, it was, like, a bit heartbreaking, you know?
Yeah.
So
I think I'd almost want to do research that also bridges those gaps as well. It's a bit of a...
Like a systematic type
thing. Yeah, it's a bit of a step away from the neuroscience, which I love with all my heart, but you're right. Like, when you see those problems staring at you in the face, you feel like you got to deal with them.
Yeah. No, it's true. This is why we need people like you in our lives.
It makes us think of the bigger picture out there.
I remember the first, like, climate strike that went on, and I was like, should I be dropping out of health sciences and going into helping and save the planet, because this seems like the big issue?
I feel like, honestly, during COVID, I had a lot of those. I was like, why am I doing this? Should I not be, like, going to, like, a third world country and, like, helping out or something?
Yeah,
like,
that's me currently.
I'm just sitting in my apartment, and it's COVID. Like, I could be doing something other than, like, online classes.
Yeah, no, I think I had a very similar experience. I was like, I need to be at the front line helping with these COVID cases. People are tired. I'm not tired. I can help. Like, but I didn't have any training in really anything. Yeah. So I think, like, most of the jobs that were volunteer roles were just like giving out COVID testing kits. And wiping down surfaces and stuff, basically. So.
But I do question if people in research do have more skills than we think. If we would have been able to have volunteered in more slightly different roles where training would have been required, been expedited.
Yeah. I think we could have.
I think so, because, like, research is very systematic. Mm-hmm. You follow a formula. We're very, we do things to a T. And I feel like in health, like, that's, especially with, like, an outbreak of any type or pandemic, like, you want to follow the rules to a T. And I feel like we're already trained to, like, do that and be very thorough. So,
yeah. I think a lot about getting post-undergrad degrees is just being able to pick up skills rather quickly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I know that during COVID, they utilized paramedics a lot to do non-paramedic related work. And I think that researchers definitely could have been pulled out of their basements for for something. But, like, I don't really have an immediate idea as to what they would be doing, I guess.
I think my one idea was, particularly here, sometimes the labs would back up for running the PCR tests.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely think, even though I ended up doing the research I'm doing, I still did take chemistry and biology first year. And it's very similar tests that we would have learned how to do in the lab. But I guess any undergraduate student, therefore, could have been in those labs running those tests.
Yeah. I guess it to me, the question would have been about resources, whether or not there were enough resources to have the equipment to support the helping grad students. But if it was a volunteer role, then I don't know. But I guess then, I don't know. My brain's going to go down an entire rabbit hole. We don't need to.
I'll go to the next. our final question for you, Darby. If you could go back and do anything differently during your master's, now that you've reflected on it a bit during this podcast, what would it be? If anything comes to mind.
Honestly, nothing.
Nothing? No, yeah.
That's a good answer. Yeah.
No regrets.
No.
Yeah.
maybe, like, I think everyone thinks this, like, maybe done a few things a little sooner.
Yeah.
Currently, I'm, like, real, like, this is my last summer. I'm, like, this is the summer I actually have to, like, work every day. So maybe making sure you step up in the summer times. I almost want to say, like, I'd do a whole different project because why not?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even, like, I mean, I'm not a full year done. But I would agree with you. I wouldn't change anything kind of thing. It's like, yeah, you can change, like, little things. Like, maybe I would have not taken my classes as seriously as I did. I didn't realize that DAL just gives you letter grades.
Graduate students.
Yeah. I'm really used to number grades. And
no one looks at
no, great. I know that grades do not matter, but at the same time, if I don't care about my classes, then it's like, why am I here, you know?
Yeah.
So it's it was an internal battle for me. but yeah, I think that is the right answer, just to not go back and change anything, because it seems like you've had a very good run at your master's, so... Mm-hmm. And it's wrapping up quickly. I'm actually really nervous for you to leave. So I'm like, please don't leave. At least you'll stay in Halifax, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I did sign a lease.
Nice.
Yes.
I'll be here for a bit.
Yeah.
There is a small part that wants to leave, because, like, when I moved to Halifax, I moved here when I was 17 and I'd never even seen Halifax before. I just kind of went along with the big move.
Yeah.
So there's, like, a small part of me that's like, how did I get it right on the first try?
Yeah.
Yeah. Of, like, really liking the first place I moved to.
Yeah. I'm hopelessly optimistic. I will think every experience is the best experience until I try something else. I think my biggest, like, eye-opener for being hopelessly optimistic is changing dance studios. I was at one place, I was going once a week, and I thought, this is, like, the best thing I've ever done in my entire life. And then I switched to a different dance studio, and I'm like, it gets better.
Better.
Yeah. But that's kind of just how, I don't know, my outlook on life is. I recently met with, like, a potential roommate, and he was like, you know, I can be very pessimistic, and I'm worried it will, you know, like, shut down this optimism you're showing. I'm like, don't worry, it's innate. I can't get rid of it. It'll be there forever. Anyways, Darby, it was super wonderful having you on the podcast today to chat, get to know you a little bit and learn about your research. And honestly, I'm quite inspired. I think a lot of times people talk about they pursued research because they were inspired by a prof or whatever, but I think it's really cool.
I didn't
cool.
talk to profs.
I think it's just super cool to have someone be interested in it because they just have a pure curiosity and, like, also just, like, a want to make the world a better place, which I think we lack a little bit. I mean, people are trying their best, but we need people like you. So
we all try.
Yeah. It was wonderful talking about it with you today.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, Out of Pocket with Olivia.
Since moving to Halifax, I've had to reteach myself how to parallel park. Because since doing my driving test, I had not come across a place that only offered parallel parking. However, I still get stressed out by parallel parking when there are cars behind me on the road that have to wait for me to finish parking before they can continue. It's kind of like performance anxiety that I get, regardless of how well I actually am able to parallel park. So this is a shout out to people who would rather drive around the block again than parallel park. You don't owe anyone an explanation. On the topic of parking, I still haven't grasped an understanding of the actual benefits of reversing into a parking spot, and I'm convinced that most people who do it consistently only do it to show off that they can. So shout out to people who would rather back out of a spot than back into a spot. You don't owe anyone an explanation.
Well, thank you for listening to our podcast, Mind the Gap. I am your host, Juliet.
And I am your co-host, Teresa.
And this was recorded at CKDU.